This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Neil Phillips from Pernod Ricard. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thanks, Chris. How are you?
I'm excellent. Excellent indeed. We're going to be talking a wee bit about terroir and Sauvignon Blanc terroir in New Zealand and specifically. But do you want to just give us a quick overview of what you do and how you fit within the big Pernod Ricard? Because they're one of the biggest wine companies in the world.
They certainly are. And the way I fit into Pernod Ricard is I actually look after all the premium wines in the Pernod Ricard business in the UK. So to give you some examples on that, for example, with Montana, we have our Montana Lesser Cirrus, I would look after that. Also, say with Jacob's Creek, on one of our major brands like that, we have a heritage range which starts at sort of £15. And within that, we're actually selling to not only retailers but also to on-trade outlets. We're selling to independent wine merchants as well. And we also include in that our champagne portfolio of Perrier-Jouët and Mumm.
Mm-hmm. What does your job entail? Does it go around talking to premium
Part of my job is media based, so I do a lot of radio. I, in terms of representing the company's brands, I do a lot of the consumer shows, for example. I love doing those. I love doing shows like the wine show. I've got the Tesco Wine Fair coming up. I really enjoy those. It's a great opportunity to get some feedback from consumers, and also it's interesting to see where consumers have actually got in terms of their understanding what's happening. And in addition to that, I go to some of those. I go out with the sales team and I act effectively as an ambassador and do the tastings with some of the key customers as well.
Oh, excellent. Nice job.
So, great job, yeah. I really enjoy it.
Good. I think the listeners should know I've been doing a wee bit of work with you. We've been doing some video work.
We've had a great time, actually.
Tasting some
wine. Chris and Neil show.
But we want to crack into Sauvignon Blanc, really, because one of the nice things about Montana's Letter Series is that you're growing grapes in different areas and trying to get the expression of those regions.
We are. And what actually happened was, I mean, in terms of Montana, it was an inspired moment in actually saying there was, in terms of growing Sauvignon Blanc in Marlborough and being the first people to do that and producing the first vintage of Montana Sauvignon Blanc in 1979. But as time progressed, it realised that actually within Marlborough, you've got these different sub-regions and actually you're getting out different characteristics there, Chris. And so that was something we decided, actually what we wanted to do with those three sub-regions in terms of Ripara, Brancott and Awatere, just taking those different characteristics, produce three different wines, one from each of those districts. And it's great fun to show those to people.
Yeah, let's just talk about those three regions first.
Yeah.
You said Ripara.
Yeah. Now,
let's start off with where Ripara is, where Brancott is, and Awatere.
Yeah, so they're all part of Marlborough. And what you've got there in terms of Ripara, you've got that in the North Warro Valley. Then you move to Brancott, which is south of that, the South Warro Valley.
That's just on the foothills, isn't
it? Yes, that's just on the foothills. And then you go southeast of Brancott, and you're actually going down to Awatere, which is the newest of those three wine regions. And I think that's about 30 kilometres away, something like that.
Yeah, it looks about that. I was having a good look on Google Maps. Have you ever seen Google Maps?
No, I haven't actually.
I tell you what, you can zoom in, and it shows the grapevines, and it lowers you in, and you can get like a side view looking at the mountain.
Oh, hey,
ever done it, type in Marlborough into Google Maps and Google Earth. You can see the hills in the background. Oh, it's fantastic.
Hey, I'm going to do that. I think it's very interesting because even though they're not that far away from each other, really, these three regions, but it's the different characteristics you actually get out of there, because we found that actually with Ripara we were getting some of those sort of tropical fruits mixed up with the gooseberry as well. They're picking a bit earlier there. You know, the sun shines onto those stones. The stones reflect then onto the vines and the grapes, and it speeds up the ripening process, and you get quite a lot of intensity there.
So Ripara is the old river, White River riverbed,
isn't it?
Yes, so it is. Gravelly, it seems to be quite large pebble stones.
They are very large pebble, smooth sunstones, they call them, and they have this tremendous effect there.
What are they doing? Are they heating up or cooling down?
They're heating. You know, in the daytime, what they're doing is they're reflecting that heat onto the vines, so they're warming the vines up, warming those grapes and vines up, and that's speeding up that ripening process, getting that intensity. But obviously, at nighttime, it cools down. But what it does is it actually means that there's a danger where you can almost get too much ripeness, and it just gets that coolness in there, so you're going to get that acidity and that balance with the wines from there as well, which is really attractive, I think.
And then the next area, Brancott, or not so much Brancott, it's more South Warro.
Yeah, it's more South Warro, Chris. You know, there it's a little bit drier, a bit cooler. They're picking a little bit later there. And some of the things that we found there as well was actually just identifying almost a bit of cut grass there, capsicum as well, those sort of flavours coming out of there as well. Very interesting.
The soils are a bit more clay.
Yes.
They're a bit heavier. And to me, when I've been tasting some of the wines we've been tasting recently, what I've noticed is it's a real textural feel.
Yeah.
The South Wairau has a heaviness to it that maybe the Rapara doesn't.
I would agree with that. And I think this is one of the things that makes it just very attractive for people to pick out these differences. And they are very distinct differences, I think, between these subregions. And then you move on in terms of the Awatere, which is very cool, very dry, quite challenging in terms of actually production there and getting decent yields. And that's that there, you know, and people think you're going crazy when you start talking about picking up the characteristics like tomato stalk there. Mm. And, you've got is that the stones, you've got clay there as well. And I think there's some really interesting characteristics which you get out of Awatere.
From a terroir point of view.
Yes.
You've got Rapara, which is probably the warmest.
Yes.
Then you've got the South Wairau, which is sort of middle ground.
Yes.
But with heavier soils.
Yes.
And then you're getting into Awatere, which is, again, cooler, but with similar silty, heavy-style soils.
Yeah? Yes, that's right, yeah.
Okay, and the Rapara, you're getting the riper fruits, probably because of the extra heat.
Yes.
And then as you move down, you're getting more textural in the South Wairau, and then Awatere, you're getting into that more that, you were saying it was tomato.
Yeah, tomato, yeah. And I think actually with the Awatere, that usually takes for me a little bit longer to come around. It's usually a bit more close at the beginning. But I find it quite a weighty Sauvignon Blanc from there. And certainly a really good food Sauvignon Blanc style.
I'm quite convinced now that you can get a textural feel
yes.
from the soils.
Yes.
You know, we've spoken to people like Simon Waghorn, who's a producer down there. He's Astrolabe in Whitehaven. And he's gone through the typical ripening process of a Sauvignon Blanc in terms of flavour profiles. You're saying that the flavours are different, but it sounds like it's more about where you pick on that continuum. So we talked about Awatere being the coolest.
Yes.
So maybe the flavours just haven't progressed as far by the time you pick.
I think that, yeah, I think there's a lot in that because clearly, you know, you've got that ripeness coming and we want to get that balance right as well. But we are really also trying to say, you know, we want the vineyard to do the talking here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we wanted to do with actually producing these three wines. That was the key thing for us, so that we could get those key characteristics out there. But clearly, you know, we have different periods of time where we're going to be harvesting there, and that clearly has an impact as well.
Do you think there's much variation from season to season? Yeah, you know, we talked about Awatere being cooler than Rapara by far, significantly cooler, but compared with South Wairau in the middle. Do you think if you had a cold season, you might see South Wairau taking on the Awatere sort of flavour spectrum? Or have you noticed that? Or do you think it's less about that?
I think it's less about that, actually, because I've seen several vintages now of this Montana Terroir range, and I've felt as though they have been much more... They've clearly, despite you know differences, obviously, vintage to vintage, but they've still come back to me and been very much three distinct styles of wine. And I felt as though when I've shown that to consumers as well, that's sort of been their feedback. They're picking up these three different styles, different flavour components in there. So I think it's less affected by that, really.
What I'm trying to get to is if it's not the temperature difference
yeah.
that's driving those changes, and I'm not necessarily convinced about the soils driving the changes. I'm trying to work out what it is. One of the key things with Marlborough is warm days,
yes.
cold nights.
Yes.
You know, not freezing cold, but
yeah.
cool nights helps to maintain the acidity.
Absolutely.
Do you think that change in temperature changes from Rapara to South Wairau to Awatere?
Oh, I think it does, and I think it does mean there's more challenges with that as well, actually, about getting that ripeness as well sometimes, because Awatere, I know there have been occasions when, in terms of the actual yields, the yields have been lower because it's just been much more challenging there getting that ripeness because it has been cool in the day as well, obviously being cool at night time as well. And clearly that's presented you know, much more difficulties down there than it does in Rapara,
yep.
which, is, as we know, is warmer and probably easier, really, to manage in that respect.
What's the common blending? Because it seems to me that you've got a natural blending partners between Rapara and Awatere. You know, Awatere probably has more of a freshness and acidity. Rapara, more of the riper fruits. They seem like a natural blending component to try and even it out. If you're a producer and you're trying to get a more consistency from year to year.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for example, with the Montana Classic, you know, what we're doing now is actually, you know, blending from all those three sub-regions. And even with, for example, say in Brancott, Montana Brancott now in terms of the letter series, you know, our finest Sauvignon Blanc that we produce, one of the things we do add a little bit of Awatere fruit in there as well, because we feel it just gives that lift. So we've learnt actually where we can use parcels from different sub-regions and actually that contribution it can make into each serving rhombo we're producing.
A completely different area now,
yeah.
Hawke's Bay.
Yes.
Hawke's Bay, Marlborough, Montana still do some... you've got a North Island Sauvignon Blanc, haven't you?
Yes, we do some work there, but we're more probably focused on doing some different things there now, like Pinot Grigio, for example.
Yeah. That seems to be the big one out there.
Yeah, it does actually, yeah.
Why are you not growing Pinot Gris or not much Pinot Gris down in Marlborough?
We're starting to grow a bit more, and we're actually going to, interestingly enough, because we launched the Montana Pinot Grigio 2007 vintage, and it's been a great success because people have just said, hey, wow, we love Pinot Grigio, but they like the minerality they're getting out of the Pinot Grigio.
Slightly spicy as well.
Slightly spicy. But what we've done with the 2008, we've actually got some Marlborough Pinot Gris in there as well, blended with the North Island, and we are going to grow more Pinot Gris so we can expand that sort of Pinot Grigio because there's a great demand, but actually we think actually just adding that bit of Marlborough fruit in there is really important as well.
Hawke's Bay,
yeah.
Obviously you think Pinot Gris is going to be a big one out there, but there is a wee bit of Sauvignon Blanc up there. What's that called and what's the key definition of that style?
I think what you're getting there is a more, we have a Church Row winery up there which produces, by the way, a fantastic wine called Tom, which is a Bordeaux blend, actually. Just have to mention that. It's absolutely brilliant.
Is it Sémillon, Sémillon?
It's a red, actually. Sorry, it's a red of a Cab Sauv. And we also had a bit of Merlot in there and a little bit of Malbec.
I thought that might have been a tannin cheek at the old French calling New Zealand. Taste of the old Tom.
Yeah, well, I know. It sounded like it was going to be that. But we do produce a little bit of Sauvignon Blanc up there. But it's actually quite a restrained style, probably quite old-fashioned, and almost in some ways for some people, I think it's quite European in style, more so than probably what we're producing down in Marlborough. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, you know, we've obviously got a lot of the work we're doing up there with Chardonnay, clearly in North Island, also some Pinot Noir, but Pinot Grigio is a big focus for us now on North Island.
Just finishing up on talking about terroir,
yeah.
I'm slowly come around to the conclusion that if you've got the right climate to grow grapes on clay or clay dominated, you do get a more textural feel in the wine. It's been a slow evolution because people talk about lots of stuff and it's very hard to prove it or disprove it, but I've seen enough wines now where I think clay does create a fatness in the wine. Have you seen that sort of difference maybe with other regions or sub-regions, either in New Zealand or anywhere in the world, really, because you've got a bit of experience in other places?
I think I agree with you, Chris, because actually I do think you get that bit of weight and in that intensity. Actually, I think you even get that in New Zealand. I think definitely that comes through for me, and I find that really attractive, actually, because I think you tend to get that more, that fruit intensity, a little bit of darker fruits on the nose there, certainly coming through. And I think, you know, we've actually... with our terroir series now, we've done some Pinot Noirs as well. We've got three different Pinot Noirs to sort of extend that out as well. And I think some of the characteristics we're getting through there, I really like Central Otago, obviously.
Hey.
You're there. You're from there, but not just because of that, because I think there's some of the wines there are really coming out in a really good style. But definitely clay, I think, has got quite an influence, actually.
All right, then, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much for your time, Neil.
It's a pleasure, Chris. See you soon.